todo el mundo.
But this was really
1981.
Welcome to the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast. I'm your host, Stacey Lane Wilson, author of the Rock and Roll Nightmares book series and director of the documentary The Ventures, Stars on Guitars. This is your destination for all things rock, where the interviewees include musicians, authors, historians, filmmakers, and more. And now, on to the show. I'm really excited about today's guest, Jennifer Banish. She's a new-to-me novelist who I just stumbled upon by chance when I found her book, The Rise and Fall of Ava Arcana. It's about a Rolling Stone reporter who uncovers the dark secret behind a famous rock star. And I enjoyed that book so much that I immediately bought her next one. I reached out to her to see if she'd be on the show, and she said yes. So let's get her on the line.
Hi, Jennifer. Welcome to the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
As I told you when I reached out to you, I absolutely loved The Rise and Fall of Ava Arcana. And that was your first book of yours that I've read.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Yeah. And I'm really into rock novels and rock nonfiction. And I felt like it really captures the electric, sometimes destructive energy the early 2000s New York music scene. So I'm wondering, like, what personal experiences or research helped you recreate that specific moment?
Well, yeah, I didn't grow up in that scene. I was a club kid. So I grew up like in the sort of late 80s, early 90s, like New York City tunnel nightclub scene. I was a promoter and a club kid who worked at all of the biggest clubs like Limelight and The World and, again, Tunnel. And I wasn't really in the sort of like rock and roll scene. I think the closest I got to it is I think I went to like Cat Club once or twice. Yeah. Yeah, and this was like a totally different scene than the one I'm describing in like the early aughts, which is loosely based on Lady Gaga's early days in New York at that time period. The way the book first came about was I was like on the phone with my agent and she was asking me what I wanted to write next. And all of a sudden she was like, because we both are like pop culture junkies. And she was like, have you heard this really bizarre rumor about Lady Gaga that when she was first coming up, she pushed her like rival and best friend off a rooftop? And I was like, what?
And wow, I haven't heard that one.
Yeah, it's like actually a very well-known urban legend amongst people who follow her.
I guess I need to quit listening to only 70s and 80s rock.
No, you don't. No. You're fine. You're good. Like, I went down that rabbit hole and the book took off from there. Obviously, it's the main character in the book, Lexi Mayhem, is very different from Gaga. Although I do find it hilarious that her new album is called Mayhem.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe she read your book.
I have a friend who works for Warner Music who swears up and down that he passed it along. So I will never know for sure, but I think it's hilarious. My book came out in 2022 and now here's her new album.
Wow. Yeah, that'd be pretty cool if she, that's her little wink to you.
She's probably like somewhere plotting my death.
That would be spectacular. Maybe even novel worthy. Yeah. So you talk a little bit about how this was inspired by a possible murder, but in your book, it goes back and forth between two different time periods and the Rolling Stone reporter trying to perhaps solve this mystery. And I feel Ava's ghost, you bring that up in a roundabout kind of way where it could be Ava's ghost, the supernatural element. How did you balance those two tones?
The book went through like a couple of different drafts. It was originally written, weirdly enough, as a podcast. And the reporter, the Rolling Stone reporter, was originally a dude. And so I went through a bunch of different ideas that I was just like passing back and forth to my agent. And the first couple of tries, she was like, nope. I'd go back to the drawing board and start again. But originally, the book was written from the POV of Lexi Mayhem and Ava. But like when I had given it to my agent and a couple of different readers, they said to me, the thing about having Lexi in there is that as a character, as like a main character, is that we're not getting the tension of her as a suspect. Because you know too much about her when she's like a main character. So then I just went back to the drawing board again, and it became a book between Kayla, the reporter, and Ava. And yeah, so Lexi got cut out altogether as her own POV. But yeah, it was just like a sort of trial and error of trying things and seeing what worked and seeing what didn't until I finally just got comfortable with the structure.
Well, I love that you're so flexible and able to pivot like that through the direction of someone else. So now that you have quite a background in the publishing world and as a ghostwriter and writing YA, and now you're writing adult, is that something that you thrive on?
Yeah, like my first ever job really as a ghostwriter was ghostwriting the last book in the Gossip Girl series, which was really popular at the time, mm-hmm. came a TV show and all that. But it really taught me that kind of flexibility and having to really try things multiple times before figuring it out. Cutting my teeth and earning my stripes like there really was invaluable later on. And especially too, I know a lot of writers are really like super precious about writing. Oh, I can only write when the muse strikes.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly.
You know, yeah, I don't subscribe to that. Writing's a job, and I sit down and do my job every day, regardless of whether I feel like it or not. And having to do that and having to get paid to do that really changed my relationship with romanticizing writing in a way that I feel can sometimes be counterproductive to producing as a writer. If I waited all day for the muse to strike, I wouldn't write anything. Sometimes she only shows up when I'm in the middle of writing a garbage paragraph.
Yeah, I can see that, you know, that because you write so many different kinds of things, which I think is great for your versatility. Yeah, I've worked as a journalist for many years, so I'm really good at deadlines and that kind of thing.
Oh,
and I think it does help train you.
Yeah, I had to talk to a lot of journalists when I was writing this book because...
I bet you did.
Yeah,
I wanted to ask with your research process, especially for someone writing for Rolling Stone, how did that come about? Did you choose?
Yeah.
Were you thinking maybe I could make up this fake publication or was it?
It was always Rolling Stone from day one. I don't know. It's really just like when I was growing up, it was like the quintessential rock publication or music publication. So it was never going to be anything else. So I never thought about making up anything like a fake magazine or whatever. I don't know why. I just didn't. It was just like immediately I was like, nah, it's Rolling Stone. But I'm not a journalist. I don't do that kind of writing. I have written a few articles, but that doesn't make me a journalist by any stretch of the imagination. So I did talk to lots of friends of mine who are journalists, and I would run things by them and be like, would this fly for a feature? What am I talking out my ass here? Or does this actually sound right? I would get people's opinions. My ex-husband's a journalist. He used to work for New York Magazine. He was invaluable there. And I have a couple of friends that are in the music business that I would run things by. So it wasn't like traditional research per se. It was more like I would write and then I would be like, oh, did I get this right? I hope I did. And then I would go and research it, make sure that I wasn't making a mess.
Yeah. Your novel does present a haunting portrait of fame's dark side, for sure. It's just such an absorbing mystery and the bad actors in the industry. Now, I'm wondering what aspects of celebrity mixed with music stardom were you most interested in exploring through your main characters' journeys?
I lived in LA for a long time, and I lived in LA for 11 years, and I grew up in New York. I've always been fascinated with the music business and Hollywood, and really funny, but when this book first started, at first, like, my agent was like, this should be like a Hollywood novel. So, like, Lexi Mayhem came really close to being like a Hollywood starlet there for a second before I decided. Yeah. So I've always been really fascinated with celebrity. And I used to, one of the first things I did when I got into writing was I started my own press. And we published like serious literary fiction with a pop edge. So I've always been really interested in like pop culture and music and art and cinema and things like that. And I try to write really cinematically. But sorry, can you tell me your question again? Because I start talking and I forget what I'm saying.
No, it's just, I was wondering what interested you the most about exploring Ava and Kayla's parallel journeys on different time frames. But
it's a novel about the music industry, like as a frame, but really it's a novel about friendship. It's a novel about female friendship, which was something that I really wanted to write about. Because I think that having the veil of the music industry hanging over their friendship really just makes it more complicated because they're friends, but they're also rivals, right? So that is something in their relationship that needs to be worked out and maybe never is, right? Ultimately at the end of the book. But that's really what interested me in the story. Not so much the story of two women who want to be musicians and pop stars, but really the story of two women who are above everything else, friends. That to me was interesting about the story.
Yeah, and I loved how you kept I feel like the character descriptions were loose enough to where the reader can really draw their own conclusions about what these people look like. Yeah. They have a similarity, but I love the descriptions of like what they're wearing, even the tactile description of the dress that Christian sends to Ava. And
I love that moment in the book. It's so campy.
Yes, it's really great. Where did you draw inspiration for things like that? Is that
just from like guys in the rock world, Phil Spector and people like that, people who really made a career of wanting to take women in music and sort of mold them into one thing or the other. The industry sort of rife with them, right?
Oh, sure. Like Ronnie Spector.
So I was thinking more old school there with characters like Christian. But it really applies today, even with crossing over into the film industry, like people like Harvey Weinstein and people like that. You know what I'm saying? Like running this sort of factory where you're churning out product. And this is what the music business has become with people like Dr. Luke and all of these kind of predatory figures who have always been there. But
yeah,
now it's like, since the Me Too movement, people are paying attention.
Yeah. And I liked how your book touches on that, but it's not too heavy handed.
Yeah. Thank you. I think in the moments of the book that are forward in time as opposed to back in time, I think that the sort of back in time moments are problematic because that moment hasn't happened yet. Like Me Too hasn't happened yet.
Correct.
So the girls have a lot less agency. And when Kayla is actually reporting on it in the, 2016, right? 2015, 2016, like we're in a whole different moment there, right? Where you can talk about that stuff.
Yeah, it was great to be able to explore those two different timelines, which I thought was pretty smart. And you seem to be doing the same thing in your next book, The Essential Elizabeth Stone, which I'm partway through in Audible, and I'm loving it.
They're like very different world, very different world, like the food world.
Oh, yeah. Like, so poised. I feel like she's maybe based on Martha Stewart. I don't know.
It's a combination. Like the book started when I saw this photo of Martha Stewart that was taken. Oh, God, it must have been like 1973. And Martha was like, I don't know if you've ever seen like old pictures of Martha, but she was like a total smoke show, like in the 70s, like the early 70s. It's just this gorgeous picture of her. And she's like on a farm and she's like posing like really artfully with a piece of like hay like in her mouth
and barnyard cheek.
yeah, she's like totally sexy. And like the book started from there, it was a combination of that. And I had a friend, I wouldn't even call her a friend. She was an acquaintance. She was a food influencer and she had gotten really big. And I had met her for lunch one day and we had this like fabulous lunch. And then a year later, she died. Like she was dead. And it was very, her death was very hush and mysterious. And I started thinking about those two things in tandem. What would it be like to be like the biggest food influencer in the world and die suddenly and leave this whole legacy behind to somebody? A legacy that maybe you hadn't been completely honest about.
Yeah. And I love how you have another writer there as the person digging into the story. Now,
yeah,
but I did find that the writing styles between the books are still you, but I feel like a little bit different. How consciously do you adapt your writing style to match the tone of different subject matter?
It's always still me. If you went back and read something that I wrote years ago, if you read any of the YA that I wrote, it would be recognizable as still me, no matter what it was. It's just, I never want to really do the same thing twice in terms of like tone or even story. There has to be something different about it. I remember like when I was writing Elizabeth Stone, my team at signed with, I have an agent, but I'm also like keyed into Warner Brothers, Warner Media. They were just like really wanting me to set it in the music world again. And I was like, guys, no, I just finished a book about that. Like I'm not doing it again. But that's like the sort of mentality and that in publishing. And you also see it in music. Oh, if it was a hit once, let's do it again.
And movies with all the remakes and sequels.
It doesn't work that way. And I don't know when anyone's going to get it. Like, it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
I was real adamant that I didn't want to go down the same road as Ava again. But I wanted to do something that I hadn't done, which was do a family sort of saga, like a family narrative. Because it scared the hell out of me. And I didn't I didn't initially want to do it because it did scare me. I didn't want to write about like a generational family thing.
I wonder if people like think, what's her relationship with her mother like kind of thing? Were you like thinking about that at all?
It's right.
Did your mom read it?
I was like, yeah, she did. It's actually her favorite book that I've read.
Awesome.
That's really funny. But yeah, I was thinking about mothers and daughters just in general. Like I have a daughter, she just turned 12. And I wanted to write something about mothers and daughters, even if it wasn't comfortable for me. And a lot of writing Elizabeth Stone wasn't comfortable for me. It was pushing me into places that I didn't really want to think about, like the death of my own mother or my death someday and my daughter being left behind. You have to like consciously face that stuff when you're writing about somebody who's grieving.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
You've explored the music industry, and I know you're done and done with that in the world of lifestyle branding.
Maybe go back someday.
Maybe to the hippie era.
Somebody wants to pay me a lot of money for the Lexi Mayhem sequel, like from her perspective. Sure, I'll do it. Hey, I know.
Yeah.
Right.
But I'm wondering, what do you have any themes or settings that you're considering drawing on for your next project?
I signed a deal with Random House maybe 6 or 7 months ago to do a series for them that's based on, I don't know what it's based on, but it's about Elizabeth Bathory, who is... You know who she is? Okay. So it's about a family that moves from New York City to a castle in Slovenia, where Elizabeth Bathory used to live. And the girls in the family get shipped off to a boarding school in Austria, and things happen. I can't really say more than that because I'm still working on it. But
sounds very gothic.
It's very gothic. It's body horror, which I have not written before, which is, again, proving to be challenging. I've just
A lot of David Cronenberg movies.
Yeah. I'm writing for teenagers, so I have to dial it back a little bit.
You got to rein it in.
Yeah. Then I'm working on an adult novel, too, at the same time that I haven't sold yet because I don't have enough of it to sell, that takes place on a remote island in the Canadian Maritimes. And it's about a perfumer. It's about a woman who works as a perfumer. And she comes from a long line of witches. And her perfumes are actually imbued with like magical kind of properties. And so I'm working on that like in tandem. So it's nuts. I'm in like two different worlds every day when I'm working.
Oh, wow. That's exciting.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, I'm in. I definitely sounds interesting to me. So I'm kind of like, so glad that I discovered you just randomly through an Amazon. What is it like an Amazon, you know, you might like.
I was like, oh, yeah. And I actually took a look at your Instagram page and your Substack, and the stuff about your mom is so wild. That album cover, that's so cool.
Yeah, she was pretty wild. Let's put it that way. Yeah, you should check out her autobiography. She really had quite the life. But
I love rock memoirs. I love like Pamela DeBar's memoirs and things like that.
Yeah, I love Pamela DeBar too. Yeah, so
she's great. You should get she her. Really is. Has she been on your podcast? You should do
she
it.
She has. Yes.
Oh,
I'll have
so
to
cool.
shoot you the link.
Yeah, yes, please. I love her.
So, well, before you go, I have to ask you my exit question. What is your own personal rock and roll nightmare, Jennifer?
Dating a musician. Any musician.
Have you been there and done that?
I have been there and done that. And I have two rules. Like now, I don't date musicians or bartenders. I feel like both are just like an express trip to psychiatric services, basically, like for like trauma. It's like an express trip to a mental hospital.
Far along the way, but yeah.
Yeah, I went through like a stage where I like only dated guitar players, and I don't know, like I really needed my head examined, I feel. Yeah, so yeah, that would be my rock and roll nightmare, would be dating any musician.
Love it. So, yeah. Before you go, what is your social media handles? Where can people find you? Do you have a website? I know you've got an Amazon author page.
My website, I do have a website. It's down right now because I'm working on it, but you can give them, they can look me up on Instagram at jbanish, like my last name. And then where else am I? I'm on everything. You can just look me up. I'm like on, except I'm not on Twitter because it's evil.
Yes.
But I'm on Blue Sky. I'm on Threads. I'm on Amazon's the easiest way to find my books. But yeah, any of those things.
I can't recommend your books highly enough. And
thank
I'm
you
a
so
new
much.
Fan. So I'm going to be around for the duration as an old fan eventually. And thanks so much for being on the show.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
This concludes another episode of the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast. Remember, there's a book series too. All the books are available in paperback, ebook, and audio via Amazon or the Rock and Roll Nightmares website. That's rock-n-roll-nightmares.com. Our official theme song is She's Out for Blood by Fuzzbuster, founded by Lars Cabot. Thank you for listening.